Oh hey, I'm Emily and this is my best friend Rachel.
Hey, I'm Rachel, and in 2010, aged 18 and fresh out of secondary school,
we went on a gap year, travelling to 5 countries in 5 months.
Shockingly, it didn't always go so well. We lost passports,
ran out of money,
jumped out of aeroplanes,
and landed ourselves in endless ridiculous scenarios.
But what we also managed to do is write a blog about our experiences.
And without smartphones or Instagram at our disposal, this blog is the only record we have of the trip of our young lives.
And 11 years on, we're reliving it all by reading back over our diary entries for your listening pleasure.
Welcome to the Gap Year Diaries podcast.
This is Jam Heart.
Where did that come from? Rachel, I think I know the answer to this, but do you know that whole beginning bit? Because guess who does?
Well, I was, just to answer your first question, I was listening to Absolute 90s in the car on the way home. And that song came on and I didn't know it was from the 90s era.
Really?
I thought it was more like a 2000 song. Why, Emily?
No reason. It's always surprising when you come up with a musical reference. But just out of interest, what do you think are those opening words? Because I feel like they're quite similar to the handwritten diary of nonsense. It's like, tech, fly, bass, walk, jam, nitty gritty. You listen to the boy from the Big Bad City.
Yeah, that's what.
Jam hot.
Jam Heart. Well, that's what I was just about to say. Something, this is a nitty gritty from Jam Heart.
Yep, well, your version is just as good.
It's fantastic. Emily, talking of handwritten diary of nonsense, I kind of did that in your birthday card. Because it was your birthday. Your Geburtstag.
My Geburtstag happened. Yeah, you did the most adorable homage to the handwritten diary of nonsense in your card that you gave me for my birthday. And it actually warmed my heart more than you'll ever know. Like, it's by far my favourite card. I'm just going to say that.
Aww.
Anyone who gave me a card, soz. Apart from little Emma, my niece, who's 7, I feel a bit bad. They were equally as good.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, you cannot beat a card from a child. God, they're the best.
And when Emma gave me the card, it was absolutely swimming in glitter, and glitter just literally cascaded off it all over everything ever. And she went, Emmy, I'm sorry, I used too much glitter. And I was like, Emma, no, we never apologise for using too much glitter. Absolutely not.
Oh, that's so cute.
I know, she's adorable.
That's an absolutely brilliant.
Yes, it was my birthday. I am now 31, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
31. I am 31 and I really felt it a few hours into the morning of my birthday, Rachel, when I'd got myself ready because I was going into work on my birthday because I am a loser. And I got myself all dressed and I was like feeling myself, looking in the mirror. I was like, yeah, look fly on my birthday. I was wearing like these cream flared jeans like the Gen Zers wear. And I was like, yeah, I look young. I look cool even though I'm 31. And I walked down out of my flat, and I live famously in Camden, live right by Camden Tube Station. So I was like walking across on my way to work. And as I was walking across this bit of pavement, which I often have walked over and often have thought to myself, this must be the most disgusting bit of pavement in all of London when you see like day after day what goes on that bit of pavement.
Oh,
I was walking across
like,
and
I can see what's coming.
Well, everyone, I mean, I couldn't. I tripped. I genuinely don't know what on, probably nothing, and I probably on my own flares. Karma was like, think you can wear Gen Z flares, do you, when you're 31, have some of this. And I fell like my I fell so that my face was literally making contact with the pavement, and I was like, wow, this is an absolutely horrific way to begin my 31st birthday. And like this woman, bless her, was like, are you okay? And I was like, yes, I'm fine. So I had to get up and go back to my flat to change, because obviously my cream flares were covered in dirt. I had to go back to my flat to change my jeans, and I must have just looked insane. I was walking clearly in one direction, fell flat on my face, and then walked back the other way. They must have been like, is she concussed? But I got back to my flat.
I'm so sorry that happened.
No, it's fine. I got back to my flat and I said, like, my housemate was like, are you okay? And I just went like, I fell down. And she was like, it's because you're 31. And I was like, I've had a fall. That's what we say. I had a fall. And then as I was getting towards the office, in my head I was like, should I tell people that this happened? Because it's pretty embarrassing, but it's also a hilarious story. And I think we all know by now which one of those impulses within me is strongest. Like, I got into the office, walked over to my colleagues, and like before they'd even finished saying hi to me, I went, I fell over. And then my brain was like, all right, so we're telling them.
We're doing this.
I was like, listen to my story, everyone. Gather round on my birthday.
It's my birthday. I have a birthday treat.
Absolutely ludicrous.
A birthday story.
But yes, so that was my birthday. That's
it was
went.
Like it was like Camden was telling you to get back inside. You cannot pull these off. Go.
No, which is really upsetting because I really think him. I can pull them off.
You absolutely can. How dare Camden like bully you for that?
I'm going to try them again tomorrow and see if the same thing happens. And if it does, then I have to just conclude that they're cursed and consign them to the bin.
The bin. Not, you know,
hugely
recycling
wasteful.
Them. No.
No. They can't go to a charity shop because then someone else will be cursed, Rachel. Think it through.
Wash the curse.
It's like a horror film waiting to happen.
Well, talking of a horror film waiting to happen, welcome to episode 11 of series 2, Peru.
Amazing.
If you are new here, just to quickly catch you up, we're two best friends from the UK reading our strange and rambling blogs from when we went travelling 11 years ago, currently reliving our time in the second country of our trip, Peru. Please, please follow us on Instagram at Gap Year Diaries Podcast. We're also on TikTok at Gap Year Diaries and we're on Facebook at Gap Year Diaries Podcast with no tea. Last week, we relived our last final day of trekking Peru's sacred Inca Trail, which culminated in very charged and intense end to the day.
We all remember that. Charged end of the day. Yes, and today, just to overview what we're going to be chatting about today, we set off at a wildly early hour to reach Machu Picchu, the Inca Trail's climax, and a true lifelong dream. Oh my God, it's quite a special ep.
It is.
It
it's
is.
Moving.
Rachel, you've gone misty-eyed at the thought.
So today, I'm not reading any of the blog. Emily will be reading it. She was the one that wrote it. And after some deliberation, it made more sense in her perspective. And I think I took the lead on one of the other episodes. So it's just fair. We're fair here.
We are fair.
So this week's blog, written by Emily, as it's a really personal recount. So no pronouns are going to be changed. And there is a little bit of GCSE dialogue for us to enjoy along the way.
Yay. GCSE dialogue. Love it. Okay, so yeah, it's me
it's
to read.
It's going to be so weird not reading, but I'm ready. I could just sort of sit back on this episode.
Yeah, why don't you put your feet up?
I can be a listener.
Put the kettle on. Get a little sandwich.
Weird.
And eat it out loud on the podcast, as you love to do.
All right, Joey Tribbiani.
I don't think Joey Tribbiani has got a monopoly on sandwiches.
I think he does.
Okay, I'll read. We were awoken today at the truly ungodly hour of 3:45 a.m. by one of the porters rapping on the side of our long-suffering tent, feeling honestly the most disgusting I have ever felt, even worse than Gandoka Times, which is a pretty high benchmark for disgusting, I will say. I dragged my aching self out of the tent, trying to improve the situation by telling myself that this would all be worth it as I struggled up those last few steps to Sungate today. Just as a bit of context, Sungate is the bit at the sort of that you get to when you overlook Machu Picchu. So the sort of famous pictures you get of Machu Picchu are kind of from a like downward looking view, and Sungate is the sort of bit that you stand at to kind of take it in. Breakfast falls down in a weary stupor and we all collected by the bar, ready to make our way to the final control point on the Inca Trail. Rachel, do you remember waking up at 3:45 a.m? It doesn't sound like something that you would have done with ease. I don't feel too bad in saying.
I did. I think I was weirdly excited
by
it, and that spurred me awake. And I had the adrenaline, that sort of late night, ooh, this feels natty.
Yeah, it's weird when you wake up early,
getting up at that time.
You kind of feel very disorientated and like everything's upside down and you're like meh.
Yeah.
And obviously added to the fact that we were in a horrible soggy tent as well.
Was it soggy? God, I don't remember that. I must have just been high off of what happened the night before.
Oh, of course, lest we forget. Because I'm still remembering it as a sort of horrible argument. But actually, as we heard last week, it sort of melted into a tender moment.
Tender moment.
Fair enough. After passing through the final control point, we had only to complete 2 more hours of trekking before we arrived at the hallowed Machu Picchu. Group morale was at an all-time high, despite the heinous waking hour, and it was with a large amount of energy that we all scrambled up the aptly named, almost vertical, Oh My God steps to Sungate. I'd completely forgotten about the Oh My God steps till I reread this blog.
I had as well, but they came back crashing back into my memory.
I'm sure they did. They were pretty intense.
Do you remember actually having to get on all fours to climb up them?
Yes, yeah, that's so true. They were kind of like a ladder almost, weren't they? And obviously the Oh My God steps was like a nickname that the guides gave these steps for obvious reasons, that they elicited that reaction quite constantly from tourists. But yeah, I do remember, you're right. On climbing across the entrance, Machu Picchu finally visible to me, I was fairly overwhelmed. A lifelong dream had been realised, and it was every bit as amazing as I had hoped. There were definitely a few teary faces amongst the hearty crowd of hikers from all sorts of different groups, each of us united in the engulfing sense of achievement as we stared down at this ancient civilization, resplendent in the new sunlight. And then Rach and I were angrily told to move out of the way by some photography legend and his zoom lens. Oh, I remember that.
Just getting
how
in
I
way.
Remember that. Yeah, but not even that, Rachel. But it was like we were just gazing down at Machu Picchu, like just taking it in and like actually trying to enjoy the moment. And then this guy was like, "Get out of the way!" and just like shoved us. And we were like, "Look, can you calm the fuck down? Like, sure, you want to take a picture, but Rachel and I are just trying to like actually look at Machu Picchu. And also, we have hardly any pictures or battery left. So please spare a thought."
There were a lot of us that just stood there without cameras. We just stood together in unison and took it in.
Yeah.
And the day, there was not a single cloud in the sky, and the sun went straight through this almost. It was perfect.
Yeah.
And to think like back then, you just didn't have the technology. How they knew how to sculpt that. That was the most prevalent memory I have, actually, wondering how they built this whole thing on the top of this hill, mountain, Andes.
This hill.
Yeah, it was moving. It was very, very moving.
No, you're so right to bring that
kind
up, actually.
Kind of like the closest feeling to a heaven.
To a heaven, yeah. Sure. But no, that is so true. Like, I think it was also because it was an achievement to have reached it. Like, I think all of us were just kind of taking a moment. But this guy obviously just did not have time for our actual emotional connection. He was just like, "Get out the fucking way." But that was such a palpable memory. And I think it was like, it kind of foreshadows what I was going to talk about in the lessons section. But it's just that interesting kind of tension between like wanting to actually be in the moment and have an experience versus taking a picture or like documenting it or trying to like capture it.
I actually get overcome with a very visceral sense of guilt if I am enjoying something without videoing it. It's a privilege problem, essentially. It's a privilege problem to have, but it does really gnaw away. And if anything, it can really distract me from just being in the moment. I think as well, Chris once said that privacy is very underrated. And I really agree with that. You can just stand there and take in the moment. You don't have to take a photo of it, but then you feel if you don't, then it's not going to be part of your memory anymore. And I think it's really dug into our social psyche these days.
It's so true.
It's frustrating.
I wonder how much taking photos of things does kind of impact on our ability to use our memory. I don't know, but that's a thought for another time. After a good half hour of awed staring, we began to make our way down, and soon enough we were actually walking around the ruins themselves, listening to Jose's speeches and basking in the sunshine and lack of physical exertion. We were, after a while, allowed to wander around freely, and I soon found myself with Rach and Clayton, who had thankfully decided to forgive us for Torchgate the night before. Lol at my sort of innocence, thinking like, phew, that was an empty threat. I don't know if I knew about I think I did know about the tender moment, because I think I had realised when I popped my head out of the tent that I'd interrupted something, because obviously I called it out as a tender moment. But I don't know if I quite realised how tender it had become.
I think there was like quite just a nice vibe between us the next day.
Yeah. Some time later, the three of us powered our way into the cafe and gift shop area, checking out the Machu Picchu cheats who had taken the half-hour train up to the ruins. This is very judgmental of me to have written it that way.
But I also remember this woman I remember so vividly, she was wearing these towering high heels and
she was with a guy who was having a McDonald's. And it was a very jarring image to see McDonald's by Machu Picchu. Mm. And I thought, this is not okay.
No.
this is ruining it, the aesthetic.
On walking down the steps to the bus that we were supposed to take to the nearby town of Aguascalientes, who should we find just casually sitting around on the bottom one but our missing tour guide, Ruben? A quick congratulatory hug with him, and it was onto the coach for the first time in 3.5 days. Ruben!
Ruben's back! Whoops! And probably knowing him, he bounced out of a bush.
He just rolled out. Aguascalientes, with its shops, banks, people, and most importantly, restaurants, sure was a welcome sight when we rocked up there for lunch. Sooner than I ever could have hoped, I found myself sitting in a restaurant with the rest of the group, having just eaten my own bowl of pasta, Trevor's chips, and half of Jennifer's pizza, laughing at Clayton and the 1 litre cerveza he had just ordered. And we all know how he ordered it, Rachel.
Can I have a cerveza, please?
Ding, ding, ding. The idea was then proffered that we should all hit the hot springs that Aguascalientes had to offer. It was for some reason at this point that I decided to make the most of our remaining time with Pedro and finally attempt to break through his icy exterior. To do so, I employed this opening line. Rachel, GCSE drama!
It is a little bit of dialogue with Emily and Pedro.
Would you do me the greatest of honours, Rachel, and play Pedro?
Oh gosh, what an honour. Yes, of course.
I think you'll do it justice. You always do. Pedro, do you even like your job?
Yes, very much. Why?
I didn't realise you were going to do an accent. I love it. Me. Because you seem to be pretty much pissed off for the entire trek. What's that about?
What? No. You didn't walk with me, did you?
No, I'm too much of a hiking legend to be stuck at the back with you. Why?
Oh, you should have walked at the back. We'd have had a right laugh. I feel like this accent could be any corner of the world.
You literally sound like Michael Sheen. Actually, hauntingly like Michael Sheen.
I find accents incredibly tricky to achieve. I think I sent you a voice note the other day. I was like, this could be Scottish, Indian or Jamaican.
It's best, I find, to just not do one. But I really enjoyed that. And I love the weird energy you brought to Pedro. The character of Pedro. I mean, we got across the key points. Basically, Pedro was bringing some bants. This was followed by a casual conversation in Spanish, which continued until we were ready to head on up to the hot springs for watery fun. Yeah, I love how I just took the bull by the horns there, and I was like, I just want to see what Pedro, like, what's going on. I think I was probably like, I've got nothing to lose because I'm not going to see Pedro ever again. So I was just like, time to just dive in and be like, Pedro, why are you so angry all the time? But Pedro was so surprised that that was my judgment of him. But yet he had been like really sullen, as we said, the entirety of the trek. So I don't really know where that disjunct occurred. But anyway, so we just headed up to the hot springs. Whilst in the pools, I had leant over to Rach and whispered, "Thank God we're in a pool now. At least Trevor can't take any more photos for the time being." No sooner had this sentence left my mouth than Trevor instantly whipped from behind his back, accompanied by the chilling phrase, "Hey guys, look what I've got, a friggin' waterproof camera."
And he really kind of pulled it out from behind his back as well, like a little cartoon character.
So weird, so weird that he not only had a waterproof camera, but that he thought to bring it with him on the Inca Trail trek. Because we did not know that there were hot springs.
No, he probably did, because remember, famously, we were upgraded. So maybe he was like prepared.
Maybe he'd read it in the literature, the trip literature.
Yeah.
And we were just blissfully unaware of what was to come, as per usual. Several million photos down the line. Weep, weep, weep. Exaggeration alert. Several million photos down the line, and we were all trudging our watery way back towards the restaurant to retrieve our duffel bags before heading to the train station to begin the journey back to Cusco. Back at the restaurant, I decided to build on my newfound relationship with Pedro, and so sidled over to him with my broke back hat in hand and proffered it to him as a token of friendship. which was a very bold
move.
So
you gave the hat away?
I did. Rachel, do you not remember? I gave my hat to Pedro.
No.
Oh my God, I thought you knew this the whole time. What did you think happened to the hat? I just threw it away, callously cast it aside. I would never do
Maybe I just skipped over that. I just...
Absolutely.
Yeah, like a CD skip.
Because you had your own hat and you were like, this is all
just,
I need.
Yeah. Where am I? I'll be in the hat. that really made me laugh when I re-listened to that bit. I think that was really, really kind. I guess I had no Woody to really give it to. I don't think Reuben really wanted it. And I think secretly I liked the hat. I felt like a little character in it.
You don't have to apologise for liking the hat, Rachel. That is absolutely fine.
For keeping something I bought.
Yeah, that is absolutely not a problem. But yeah, to give Pedro my hat as a token of friendship, as I've written in the blog, was quite a bold move considering like that he'd literally mentioned one time that he liked the hats. Like only one point had he expressed anything other than a completely neutral feelings towards our hats. And yet I was like, I know what Pedro will like, this hat.
He'll love it.
He seemed 100% thrilled at this gesture and promised me that he would wear it on every trek he did and would tell people that it came from me. He then kissed me on the cheek and waved me off with the rest of the group to the train station. Aw, so the hat worked.
Aw.
I told
you, that
was
really sweet.
It was sweet.
That was, again, a little tenderness there in a slightly different way.
And also it's important to mention at this juncture that... I named my Stickman tattoo after Pedro.
You did. Yeah, you did. Famously, that Stickman tattoo you got aged 18 in a defiant sense. Yeah, I would get a Stickman tattoo, and skipped your art class under the ruse that is a dentist appointment.
Yep. If we want to hear the full story of my Stickman tattoo, I believe it's episode 4 at the end. But yes, I mean, that's sweet that I know my Stickman tattoo after Pedro, but it seems odd because I wouldn't say that he was the person that had the most kind of influence on my life at the time, but you know.
No, really, but I liked the name as well. I have a funny feeling. I was like, I love Pedro.
Pedro.
I think I liked it as well.
He lives forever on my arm. Not real Pedro, my tattoo. To clarify, imagine if real Pedro lived on my arm. That would be quite strange and a little bit inconvenient.
With his hat.
For both of us.
With your hat on.
Oh, okay. The train journey passed in a chatty haze, with Rach and I jabbering away at an unwitting Julia and Michael, who had had the misfortune to be seated opposite us. Presently, we arrived at Machu Picchu Station and wearily dragged our exhausted selves and our duffel bags after Reuben to a car park full of minibuses, one of which would take us on the 3-hour journey back to Cusco. Oh my goodness, do you remember the intense
of
rage
course I remember.
And conversation that happened at this point?
There was a lot of stressful twists and turns, but we were in this little minivan and there was only enough for, there was only enough for 15 and there were 17 of us.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, I remember it.
Yeah, and we had to really, really cram. And you were like, should we just, you know, really cram in? I can sit on the floor. It doesn't matter. You're being really sweet about it. I wasn't. I'm just sitting there, like, just quietly trying to not make things worse. That's what happens. If I get kind of stressed, I go very quiet and in on myself. Like, if I say anything, it's going to really piss people off. So I'll just go quiet. I think Reuben said, no, we're going to get out and we're going to go into this other minibus. But it was exactly the same. And we all sat in exactly the same places again. And we were just properly cramped. And you said this brilliant line.
I said, so it's almost like we didn't have to move bus at all, which obviously everybody loved and didn't find at all annoying.
Whereas I was thinking, is there an extra space? Like, Reuben seems so dead certain and we've just done all this movement, so I'm not going to argue. But when you said that, I thought, oh yeah, no, they've messed up. Hang on a minute.
Hang on a sec. Eventually, we all settled down in our delightfully cramped seats and Rach, Clayton and I started up an angry conversation about the ridiculousness of the whole situation. After a few minutes of this hushed discussion, we were interrupted by Lisa leaning over the back of her seat to inform us, "We can all hear you, you know. You might as well just talk normally." Great, another journey where we had successfully pissed everyone off before the bus had even left. Tensions were so high.
You could all hear... We can all hear you, you know.
We can all hear you because you're talking at a literally normal volume. You insensitive little brat.
We were really giddy and stupid as well, I think. I know. And we were just repeating things that had happened on the trip back to each other.
I know, we were just being very, very silly and annoying. About an hour of meandering and pothole-ridden roads passed, and we then began to recognise our surroundings as we drove through Ollantaytambo. Happily enjoying the darkened scenery, all 17 of us were truly confused as the bus came to a juddering halt halfway up the path through the town. It turned out that we were being held up by a sweet festival parade, having a jovial time up ahead, and heartily blocking the road whilst at it. Tired, as it was now about 9 p.m. and we had been up and active for an entire 18 hours, ragingly hungry, desperate for showers and generally in a pissed off state, the half hour we were stuck stationary with constant blaring horns from irritated cars did not pass by easily. Another ludicrously long sentence. Once we had eventually started to move again, the group's mood was low. Scrap low, it was murderous. Wildly overdramatic word to use.
Murderous.
It was low, though.
I don't know. I think we even got snapped at, you know.
Oh, really? What, again? Even more than the first time?
Yeah, I think we did.
Snapped
yeah,
at?
Yeah, I think we did. All on the floor. We're does that even make
bus,
sense? Well, we're
bus.
Gonna keep it. That made me laugh. And I was going through a bit of a rough time with my stomach at that point.
Oh, right.
I felt like
oh,
I was pregnant with a brick. Oh, my stomach was so
awful.
Knotted and
oh,
tight.
Bless you.
Oh God, I remember the van went over a little bump.
Oh.
It was just, I was like, nah,
oh,
nah, nah.
Oh yeah, because
like
it was
very... Saito Bob getting yeah. whacked with a rake in the face.
Great reference. Yeah, because I have written there, like, it was a pothole-ridden road, so I can imagine that that was pretty horrible for you, bless you.
Oh, yeah. I think that was the first time I took the laxative, not on the van, that would have been, probably
have been
murderous at that point. But no, I think Lisa gave me some and it really helped after I got the bus. But yeah, I don't recall a pain quite like it looking back. Yeah, it wasn't a fun bus journey. So this is why this final paragraph just really, really sums it up.
It does. I also love that we've, called out the first time you ever took a laxative. That's really important to get across. Okay.
Yeah,
once
yeah.
we finally arrived back in Cusco, Ruben, who of course had arrived back before us somehow, stood at the front of the coach, looked at our bedraggled, grimy, raging, exhausted faces, and thought it apt to ask us this. So who wants to go out tonight? Never has an offer to go out been less appealing than that.
We didn't go out, did we? I think we went, I couldn't.
No way.
No.
We did definitely go out in Cusco. That's
relaxing.
But we did not go out
yeah,
this particular
yeah.
night. No way. Absolutely no way. I think like we got up at 3:45 in the morning. I mean, come on, guys. Like we're not machines.
We were tired.
We were very tired, bless our hearts. But that's the end of that blog. That's the end of our Inca Trail.
Well done, Emily.
Blog. Yay. We're done with the Inca Trail.
Very nicely read.
Oh, thank you ever so much. I worked really hard on my
very welcome.
Blog voice. Rachel.
Yep.
Hey.
Heya.
Oh, hey there. Rachel, I'm going to ask you who the best person we met / favourite memory with a person wasn't each other was, but I know that we are both going to say the same thing for this section.
Yes.
We're going to have a joint section on a little side story that we didn't talk about in the blog. But do you want to kick off?
Yeah, we were standing, cast your mind back to when we were standing up upon Sungate, the sun welcoming us in to its lovely
gate.
A lovely gate, yes. And as we were sort of
like,
taking
hey,
us in,
my gate.
we're up here. I think there was a guy taking pictures next to us, and I noticed he had a very like British accent. And I think it was me that probably got talking to him. And it turns out he was from Bishop Stortford, which is the small hometown where we are from. And he was part of the Bishop Stortford Tennis Club. And it really hit me in my giggle dick. I found that brilliant. And it felt like he had been kind of taken out and just plopped there on top of Machu Picchu, and we became quickly obsessed by him. So each time we saw him, we're like, hey, you're from Bishop's Stortford, oh my god, hey, like fangirling off of this, you know, off of this guy. And this was quite funny the second time. The third time it was okay, but by the fifth or sixth time it was starting to get wary, and by the seventh time we were in the van ready to go, and we could see him from the window from his van, and you could just tell he wasn't even smiling at this point, he was just hiding his face.
so true. I remember that so vividly, because we kept seeing him, didn't we, like along the journey, yeah, like from like Sungate all the way down, like back on the train and all that. We kept just like seeing him every time we saw him, we like greeted him with the same level of enthusiasm. I think he was called Richard.
Yeah, we were so excited to see him. Like, it could have very well been Richard.
Richard, hi,
but
Richard, hi.
When we were on the bus, that was during the fractious, murderous, yes, feel of stress. And there was me like, oh my God, look, it's him again. It's Richard. And why that was endlessly entertaining to us as well. Like, why was that always so funny?
I don't honestly know, but you're so accurate in how you say, like, that seventh time of seeing us, he was literally just like, oh my fucking God, like, I wish I was literally anywhere else. Like, just absolutely
maybe
trying
the
to,
tennis
like,
courts.
The tennis courts of Stortford, just absolutely trying to hide behind his friends. Like, please don't let them see me again.
I must have said, like, so do you annoying. Know my dad? Dad plays at the tennis court, like, not give a shit. Like,
my dad. Richard, do you know my dad? Richard!
Richard! Richard!
Richard, have you been to the local prezzo? Richard!
What was the lesson you learnt? The lesson you learnt.
What was the lesson I learnt? So, yes, this was quite a poignant lesson for me to learn. I, again, can't say for sure that I learnt it on this day, but I think this blog really, like, sets up a good kind of context for this very important lesson that I have learnt in my life, which is, obviously, like, this had not occurred to me, as with everything ever, it hadn't occurred to me before this point, and didn't filter through to my naive brain probably at the time. But it's something that, like, obviously in my subsequent life has really become quite a prominent sort of thing that's front of mind a lot of the time, especially when I used to work in the travel industry, which is, giving it so much preamble, not actually getting to the point, which is basically the lesson of over-tourism. So over-tourism, as you know, the clue's in the name, it's basically when a place just gets too popular for its own good, essentially, and just the amount of tourists that are passing through is kind of unsustainable. You see it quite a lot with certain destinations, especially like cruise ships contribute a lot to this, like certain ports. You see it a lot with absolutely iconic places like Venice, Dubrovnik, Barcelona, those kind of places. They just can't cope necessarily with the amount of tourists that are passing through, and especially with things like Airbnb making it so much easier for you know, like, there's an impetus there for local people to be involved in the tourist industry as well. It's like, it's good, it obviously has its plus points, of course, but it also just results in like the kind of destination like losing its authenticity, and you know, people who have lived there for years and years and years, and like their families have lived there, are, you know, not suddenly able to afford rent because the demand is too high, etc., etc. So that's kind of just what over-tourism is as a concept. And of course, I now know, 11 years on, that Machu Picchu is definitely a place in the world that has suffered greatly from over-tourism, to a point where it has had to be closed, like the Inca Trail has had to be closed a few times because they were just seeing unsustainable volumes of people wanting to do the trek. I don't know what the situation with it is currently. I can't say. I probably should have researched that prior to going on this self-important rant. But basically, I know that they have ticketed it, certainly in recent years, so that you know, there's only a certain amount of people allowed to do the trek at any one time. And I don't think that was the case when we did the trek. I don't remember quite how busy it was when we did it. That doesn't really come to mind. I don't remember thinking like, my God, there's so many people, but I do obviously that we were definitely aware of lots of other tour groups doing it at the same time as us, especially when you got to like the campsites and things, there were lots of other people around. So it definitely was something, I think I didn't, like, again, because I was an absolute ignorant little moron, it did not twig in my head that there would be more than just our tour group doing the Inca Trail at any one time, which is so silly looking back, but I just had no idea about these things. So I think, like, yeah, just, you know, like learning that lesson over a period of years has kind of made me remember my time at Machu Picchu. And obviously, you know, it's a catch 22 because these places are so famous because they are as amazing as everyone says they are. And of course people are going to want to go there, and of course people are going to want to experience it for themselves. And that is totally fair enough. And there's absolutely no way that you can value one traveller's experience over another. Like, why should Rachel and I have been able to have that experience when we did, and yet now it's harder for people because of the sheer volume of tourists? Like, that's not fair. Obviously that's based on privilege.
Yeah, and it's like that classic line of if you go somewhere, like, you know, something like Machu Picchu is just world renowned iconic place, and say, oh, there's too many tourists there, what gives you the right to say that? Because exactly. You're standing exactly the same position as them.
It's completely true, and it's an absolute dilemma.
It's a catch-22.
It's a travel dilemma. It's very, very difficult to reconcile, and I haven't really found a way to reconcile with it. Obviously my views on travel have skewed slightly since working for an environmental charity, but it is very tricky. It's very tricky to know what's like a responsible thing to do as a traveller that wants to do your trip responsibly. I think
it is as well, but then when it's very difficult, but then you see, because tourism has just gone quite steadily and slowly, it's just become more and more prolific over time, that something like COVID, it just completely collapsed the tourist industry so quickly and so vast, a vast way, that in a place like Thailand, for instance, always reference back to that, but that was 20% of their country income, and people were, it was really quite morbid, but people were dying because they could not support themselves because of tourism. Absolutely. Has just dropped off. So then it's like, how much do you go back? Because then it becomes like an economic way.
It's really hard. And I think it takes on a new dimension when it's to do with things like Machu Picchu, which are it's a physical, actual collection of ruins, ancient ruins, it's ancient monument, and it damages it for, you know, endless processions of people walking up and down it, walking around it, touching it. Like, that does damage over years, and I think that was kind of more of the impetus of for restricting the number of people doing the trek at any one time, was because it was getting damaged. Like, paths were collapsing and stuff like that, especially when there'd been bad weather. So I think like that's a slightly different consideration also when you're looking at like one specific attraction as opposed to like a country or a place. But again, as usual, like, I don't have a specific point, I just have a kind of, you know, beginning of a discussion, but it's certainly something that I was not aware of prior to trekking Machu Picchu.
And well, neither was I as well. I don't want you to say it was just you, but it was myself as well.
Yeah, of course. And I think, you know, like, we can kind of slightly be forgiven for that, but also, like, yeah, it's just tricky. But certainly when I was working at Lonely Planet, we developed this thing called an overtourism matrix, which was super interesting, where it was basically like a list of tourist attractions, countries, cities or whatever, and they were kind of plotted on this matrix according to lots of different factors to do with their overtourism. And because it's not just like to do with volume of tourists, it's also to do with like whether the place has actually got the infrastructure to cope with that volume of tourists. Because if you take like London, for instance, London has an enormous volume of tourists passing through, but because it's so vast and because it is set up for, you know, like, obviously parts of it, this isn't true,
and the transport, yeah,
and of course gentrification is a problem, so like, you know, it's not as cut and dry as this, but London doesn't struggle quite so much with the sheer volume of tourists that Barcelona would, purely because, you know, Barcelona is a much, much smaller city, etc., etc. So like, there's lots of things to consider, but I definitely would, like, if I was to make one point from this endless ramble, it would be, do definitely bear in mind the over tourism implications of visiting certain places. Like, do a bit of research around it, see if there's like a certain time of year that's better to go, and do just be mindful. Like, I think that's all I would say, and I know that sounds preachy, and I have absolutely no right to be preachy because I absolutely, you know, dined out on it when I was younger, but just a lesson I've learned, and I do try and apply it to my trips now.
And I think as well on that note is when you are researching what to research, research the tour groups and don't just go for the absolute cheapest one, because that might be damaging the locals who are working there and supporting their families for it as well.
Yeah.
So just make sure that you look for them.
Yeah. Just research. Research is key. Sorry, that was very soapboxy. I apologise. But it was an important and valuable lesson for me to learn. It's definitely a lesson that's really shaped a lot of my life and a lot of my decisions and certainly my career as well. So I did want to give it a bit of a shout out. But Rach, what lesson did you learn?
The lesson that I learned, so just quite short and sweet. So the Incas really believed in animism, which is spirituality, through animals, and so they looked at the shape of the mountains, and you know, if you quickly want to Google to see what it looks like, but and they said it represented the condor, the large bird that they had that was native to the Andes, and the puma as well, and they could kind of make out the outline to those animals. And I remembered when I bought from the Reed Islands, Euros Reed Islands, I had bought something handmade that also represents those same animals. So I just love the fact that it's really intertwined in their culture in such a strong way, and I really love that lesson. Thought it was beautiful, and that's mine.
Yeah, that's a good lesson. It was interesting to learn about like the animism that the Incas had as a part of their belief system, because like I think animism is like the application of like a living soul to otherwise inanimate objects, taking that inspiration from animal and human souls, obviously. But yeah, like
just think about it, like Pocahontas and that song Colors of the Wind.
Yes.
When they said about the rock having the soul.
Absolutely, you're so right. But yeah, I definitely remember that. It was a really lovely, like, because when someone points it out to you, you do sort of start seeing those shapes in the nature as you go around. But yeah, lovely. Absolutely lovely. Machu Picchu
just gave it an extra layer of magicalness.
An extra layer of magic. Oh, lovely.
It was magic, wasn't it? Whole kind of sun gate and being there.
Oh, it was one of
those true rare life moments of having that real magic feel.
It really was, yeah. It really hit you in the soul, if that's the thing.
Yeah. I'm now thinking about that Colours in the Wind song. Every rock and tree and creature has a life, has a spirit, has a name.
Oh my god, when I was a kid I had that whole soundtrack on CD. It was like my very first CD that I had, and I remember like we got a car that could play CDs, and I was like, Pocahontas please. My parents were like, oh my god.
I had a Pocahontas towel.
Oh my god, we were absolute fangirls.
Yeah, we really were. I don't know who bought that, mum or dad. I don't know why.
Maybe
they purchased that
purchased
towel,
it but... together as a joint decision from the joint account.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Gap Year Diaries podcast. I think we can safely say the end.
Yep.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone, and as always, you can subscribe to us, you can share us with a friend, you can review us, give us 5 stars 5. That's 5. I'll say it again.
5. 5.
4 plus 1, 5. You can give us 4 plus 1 stars.
Oh, because it's nearly like coming to Christmas. 5 gold rings or stars.
5 lovely stars. Yes, thank you. That would be amazing if you did. You can also follow us on Instagram at Gap Year Diaries Podcast, as we said at the beginning. You can also follow us on TikTok or Facebook. And yeah. We would love to hear from you, as always. Let us know your experiences of Machu Picchu. Did you get moved out of the way so someone could take an incredibly zoom lens shot? Or did you meet who I called Richard?
Did you meet anybody from... Yeah, I was about to say, did you meet anybody from the tennis court from Bishop Stortford?
It's doubtful, but you just can't rule it out, as Rachel and I learnt.
So in the next episode, we spend more time in and around Cusco, exploring some sacred Inca ruins on horseback.
Oh, lol.
I can't wait for that vlog bit.
Yes.
Emily, just really, really quick, because this is some Emily knowledge I'm bringing in here. I think I'm going to stake your favourite Disney, I know, is Robin Hood.
Yep.
But your second favourite, I think, is Emperor's New Groove.
Correct.
And I listened to a podcast episode that was about 3 hours long on that.
Oh my god. And where do you find these podcasts?
Yeah, they I don't know, but it was a great podcast. But I just thought of you, and that was based in, you know, it was based in the Inca, in the Andes.
It was, you're so Inca right. Ridge. And that is why it is one of my fave Disney films. Yay! Write us in, tell us your fave Disney films. Tell us for 3 hours about what your fave Disney film is. Yes, we'll see you next week, guys. Thanks for listening. Lots of love.
Thanks, guys. Love.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Ta-ra.